We have Kyle Wilson on the show with us today. Now, for those of you who don't know Kyle, he shares lessons from collaborations with amazing icons in the business industry, such as Jim Rohn, Darren Hardy, Brian Tracy, John Maxwell, Les Brown, and many other massive business icons. He's also sold over 7 million books as a publisher over the past 25 years. He knows how to teach you how to leverage a book-to-book speeches, build a list, create a brand, and get into important doors and get interviews out the wazoo. This guy just knows everything. He's phenomenal, and he's been a mentor to many, so we are so pumped to have him on the show. Kyle, how you doing, brother?
Hey, doing phenomenal. Thanks, guys.
What is your story? What makes you unique, and how have you became the person that you are today?
Yeah, I don't know. It's all a journey, right? And so my story is I grew up in a small town, never went to college. I had a significant emotional experience at age 19. I'd been into drugs and on a severe level, and really changed my life and started my first little business early 20s. Age 26, I made the decision to move to Dallas, a bigger city, and kind of break out of that glass ceiling. And within a year, I ended up going to a seminar, and the guy putting it on was looking to hire people. And I would have been the last person you would have ever hired or wanted to do it, because the thought of having to go speak in front of audiences was terrifying.
Yeah.
So outside my comfort zone, but I had run out of options, and I was just in this unique place. It's a whole long story of the serendipitous events that led me to that. And they were pretty serendipitous. So I took this job where I had to make 100 phone calls a day, cold calls a day, to try and book myself to go speak for two companies. Wow. We're talking car dealerships and real estate offices where they could care less about an outsider coming in to give them information or teach them something and then sell them tickets to a seminar. Mm-hmm. But I was desperate. And, I say opportunity precedes personal development. And once you have an opportunity, you get turned on. You'll start reading the books. You'll get up early. You'll stay up late. You'll make the phone calls. You'll do whatever it takes. And so I became that person. I started reading the books, but, you know, Think and Grow Rich and The Magic of Thinking Big. And I actually became the top sales guy for Jerry Haynes. Little did I know that would lead to meeting Jim Rohn and then lead to me going out on my own and putting on big events, 2,000-person plus events through my own company. And I would hire Jim Rohn, hire Brian Tracy, hire Og Mandino. And that's 1993 when I started doing that.
Wow.
And, after multiple events, Jim Rohn told me, we were in Kansas City, and he said, Kyle, me and my partner split up. So for this next event, instead of paying them, just pay me directly, and I'll take it off the tab. They owed him $500,000.
Wow.
So the partnership had not worked out. And so I knew Jim wasn't looking for another partner, because that's the second time that had happened. Back, you know, you hear Tony Robbins and Jim talk about adventures and achievement back in the 80s, and they're filling up all these rooms. And Jim said, when we were 800,000 in the hole, we shut that down. So I knew that in the back of my mind. So I said, Jim, listen, I think you're the best speaker in the world. I'm a pretty good promoter. I would love to have an exclusive with you. And here's what I'll do. I'll pay for everything, and I'll pay you off the top. So we don't have to worry about splitting the profit, because that's not worked out too well. I'll just pay you off the top.
Right.
You'll give me an exclusive. And we shook hands. You know, it was way too early to get married for him, because he had just come off this. So we just did a little handshake. And, I would say, you know, within months, I had a plan that, you know, took him from 20 speaking dates to 110. And then I tripled his speaking fee. And then I started creating products. And I did this thing called the wheel, drew a circle on a sheet of paper. And Jim was the hub. And I put spokes, and each spoke was a product or service he had.
Yeah.
And he had a book, he had an audio series, and he had a 1-day seminar, 2-day seminar.
Yeah.
And the premise behind the wheel is, how do you get people on the wheel and take them around? And each spoke is your product or service. And I have a whole formula, and we'll talk about it later, of how do you pick a spoke. But where I'm going with that is that led to me creating a little quote book that checked every box off of how you create a spoke, including what's Jim's secret sauce, who's his avatar, and how can we create an army of advocates to go promote us. And this little booklet moved 6 million copies. And so from, you know, the last part I'll say about this is that first couple of years, I mean, we're just blowing and going, and I have a team of 20 people, you know, from zero to 20. And I realized, you know, Jim's kind of like the gateway drug to personal development. I mean, people would hear Jim Rohn and go, I get it. And so I thought, you know what? Jim's not that ambitious to create products. I mean, he wasn't. You mentioned John Maxwell early on, and Brian Tracy, who's Brian and I've done so much the last 30 years. Those guys were creating a lot of products. I mean, they were knocking it out. That wasn't Jim's thing. He didn't care about that. So I started another company called Your Success Store, where I would then take Brian Tracy and Mark Victor Hansen and Les Brown and Nito Quibin and Bob Berg and all these other speakers, Zig Ziglar, into those same companies I got Jim into. And I started selling their products and booking them for events. And, you know, that led to now two companies and working with all these amazing people. And that went on until 2007 when I sold all my companies and retired for a bit.
Dude, that's amazing. Unbelievable. So you've had a tremendous amount of success, even just through your marketing strategies. You know, you've helped raise the bar for a lot of these crazy, awesome business icons. With all that being said, I mean, what, like, do you have like a favorite accomplishment that you've done over these past 25 plus years?
You know, I put on some big events, like each one of these products. You know, when I sold my companies, I sold over 100 intellectual properties. So you might look at a product and that was a year of my life. You know, that was to fill up an event, and to, you know, the events were my events. And so I'm hiring Brian and Dennis and Jim and, you know, this whole list of speakers in the Hollywood film crew, and then you put it on, and then you have to edit it. And I would edit it because I would look at this like, this is going to be around 20 years from now. And so it's a year of your life to create the event, make it profitable, capture it, turn it into a viable product that could be something you're really proud of. So those were my biggest accomplishments. But I think the biggest one, honestly, is at one time I had a really bad culture in my company. I was the rainmaker, and I was hiring other entrepreneurs, which I don't recommend. You know, if you have a rainmaker, you need to hire salt of the earth people that can go implement what you're doing and reward them. Mm-hmm. And I figured out at some point in time, I just didn't have the right team. And it led to a lot of pain. And eventually I came up with a formula that included profit sharing, included celebrations, included a 10-point review. And within a year, we started creating a culture that is probably the thing I'm the most proud of. And we took vacations to Destin, you know, get the MTV house, or go to Beaver Creek and get the big house on the mountain to ski. And those were part of the celebrations. And then the profit sharing, I had people making $15 an hour that got paid six figures. Wow. Certain years where we had really good years. And that culture we created between a team, everyone gets rewarded equally, and you're playing together. It's like, I felt like we won Super Bowls together. And I think the reason I'm most proud of that is that was not part of my skill set. Mm-hmm. I had tried to hire office managers. I'd tried to delegate, but really relegate, you know, and this happens a lot. We relegate things in the spirit of only do what you're good at. And we abdicate responsibility sometimes for things that really are core competencies. You know, before we started interviewing, we were talking about Darren Hardy, and Darren's a really good friend. I coached Darren for 3 years, and he was recently on my podcast, and we talked about his three core competencies. And number one, he's like, I only have three jobs. Number one's create content. Number two is deliver content. But number three is what would shock people: marketing.
Right.
And he's not delegating the marketing. Yes, he has people that do the sausage making, but he is the architect of his marketing. And point being, there's certain things you bring in the people, but you, if it's yours, you have to oversee it. I relegated running the culture of my company. And it wasn't until I took a step back.
Yep.
Now, listen, you got to get the plane off the ground. And I did that. The plane was off the ground, but then the seats on the bus changed. I needed a different type of person that was there for all the right reasons. And then I still had to reward them. And so I'm a big believer in reward your people, but create the right, it's actually a puzzle to solve, you know, and all of life is about that. It's figuring out the challenge and finding, is there a solution? And typically there is.
Yeah. Wow.
Dang. Yeah. That's amazing. And that's a unique answer. If I had to guess, knowing you and knowing your background, I wouldn't have guessed that as your favorite and your greatest accomplishment. So I really appreciate that.
Well, and we're talking business accomplishment too, right?
So, yeah,
right,
of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I really appreciate that insight.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I would have guessed something around the lines of, as you'd mentioned, Jim Rohn. So I know you put a tribute to Jim Rohn recently. Would you be able to kind of explain what that process was like?
Yeah. So I sold my companies in late 2007, and the guys that bought me were buying Success Magazine, and I sold them for some personal reasons, but I stuck around for a year and a half. Little did we know, Jim would get an illness and pass away in 2009. And I was also the agent for Dennis Waitley and Ron White and Chris Widener, a bunch of other speakers in addition to Jim. And there were some real advantages of Success buying me that would help all the speakers. But Jim started getting sick, you know, in 2008. And when it was finally diagnosed is with the diagnosis and we knew it was terminal, then we started thinking about doing a special tribute. And so I reached out to John Maxwell and Brian Tracy and Zig and Les Brown and Mark Victor Hansen. And I set up film crews in Dallas and also Los Angeles. So we spent a weekend in each of those cities, but then I also invited people that worked with Jim. I invited his good friends, his accountant, you know, his just different people. Mm-hmm. We had about 50 people. And, you know, it turned out to be about 2 hours of just emotional. A guy named Larry Thompson, if you guys know Larry, one of the co-founders of Herbalife, you know, people like that. Oh, yeah. Don Hobbs, who's now the president of Success Magazine. But I got that down to about 20 minutes. So I had the 2 hours on one side of the DVD, but then 20 minutes. And then I put in a bunch of Jim Rohn clips.
Yeah.
That fit each topic, you know, whether it's who's your inner circle and bringing value. And a month before Jim passed, I got to watch it with him.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And he looked, it's the greatest day I ever had with Jim. You know, people say, what's the greatest lesson? I got a lesson.
Yeah.
What's the greatest day? That's the greatest day. and it was powerful. And there were a couple of people I wouldn't say he was estranged from, but they hadn't talked in a long time and maybe it didn't end perfectly.
Yeah.
People that he'd worked together with, two come to mind that were just sobbing on the tribute, talking about how Jim had changed their life. And I remember him looking at me going, wow,
that's powerful.
And that's priceless. And, one of the guys, William Bailey, you know, Jim Rohn would talk about Earl Schoaf, but he'd also talk about Bill Bailey. He didn't talk about Bill as much, but Bill was equally, if not more, an influence. So a lot of Jim's stories, you know, he'd say, it's more interesting for my friend to go there and for him to go there and come back than if you went yourself when he tells the story. Like there were just a lot of stories that were about Bill Bailey. Mm-hmm. And Bill had won the Horatio Alger Award, founder of Best Line Products. But Bill was ill and he couldn't travel, lived in the a hard to get to place in Kentucky. And I said, I can't do this tribute without Bill. So I got on a plane, flew to Lexington, rented a car, drove an hour and a half into the back hills of Kentucky. I can say I've been there now.
Yeah, and nice.
Yeah, we spent the day together. And that was a special moment to me to think about. Bill was on that tribute video. And then Bill gave me some great insight I'll share. He said, and Bill, again, like I interviewed Les Brown on my podcast, and Les talked about his two greatest influences, and he talked about them a lot. And it was Jim Rohn and Bill Bailey.
Wow.
Bill, the people that know who Bill is know what an incredible guy he was. And I had actually, I was Bill's agent for a while, and I published a book, but he was also a poet, and he would have just poems come to him, and he never wrote them down. They were just like in his head. He was a brilliant guy. And so I published a book of poems called Rhythms of Life. So I'm just saying that he was a philosopher, if you will. And we're at his place. We had filmed the part for Jim. Then we went to lunch. And he said, Kyle, the thing about goals is, no matter what goals you could have set, you would have never known you were going to meet Jim Rohn.
Yeah.
He's like, you have your gifts. All you can do is go out and do your best and let them take you where they're going to take you. We can't predict how it's going to turn out because we don't know how it's going to turn out. Yeah. You could have never predicted you'd met Jim Rohn. And I think about that all the time. And a common theme with people I've interviewed is there's always a serendipitous story. There's always a serendipitous story of how they met the person that changed their life. Literally, or the opportunity that changed their life.
Yeah. I mean, you were actually, and you said it earlier in this interview, you were saying that opportunities are, I think you said they're greater than personal development. Is that correct?
No. I said opportunity precedes personal development. It's hard to be turned on unless you have an opportunity. But once you have an opportunity, the light goes off and now you're motivated. You get up early, stay up late, you'll read the books, you'll set the goals, you'll do all those things. And so sometimes people just don't have the opportunity that gets them turned on. And we've all had that where you're a little bit stuck and you have more than you could ever get done and you have zero motivation. And then something happens, a new idea or the phone rings and now you're turned on. You go out and do that in the stuff you were stuck on.
Yeah.
Like you can't take on more until the right thing comes on. Then you can take on, you know, twice as much.
Yeah, exactly. Man, that's really good wisdom. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I mean, obviously you've gone through a lot when it comes to just learning how to market and grow your business and do all these amazing things that you've done. But with that, I assume that there's also been some difficult lessons that you might've learned. Do you mind kind of sharing maybe one or two of the most difficult lessons that you can think of that you've learned in your career?
You know, Zig said, never do a good deal with a bad guy.
And yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I've had to learn that at times, and it's not their fault. It's our fault. It's typically we want something that seems too good to be true. There's a little get rich quick in there. There has to be some allure, but I want to take it a little step further. So for me, it's not always that. It's not always that they were a bad guy, but I didn't have the refined philosophy for, you know, I just spread myself too thin on things that didn't matter that much that would take me down the wrong road. You have to have a little bit of margin in your life to be ready for when things happen, and they will. But also for opportunities. And if you're maxed out on trying to do everything, and I think when I think of twice, I had 20 people that I went down to two, both times the big shift was we were doing too much. And so I'm never impressed when someone comes to me with a big idea that has 1,000 moving pieces. I'm always impressed when they come to me with a simple executable idea. Like, okay, wow. That makes sense because, you know, everything's a pivot.
Yeah.
You know, if they can tell me everything that's going to happen, I'm like, okay, that, you know,
not going to happen like that,
but tell me the plan, but then the short term things you're going to execute. But yeah, it was things moving too fast, having the wrong people, not paying attention to the numbers. For my inner circle Tuesday night, we did a whole thing about revenue. And I said, listen, I'm not going to talk tactics. I'm going to talk, you know, principles. And here's one of my principles. And this doesn't lie. When I know my numbers, things work. Yeah. When I don't know my numbers, they don't work. I've always had times where I just forget to keep up with the numbers. But when I'm in my game, I know my numbers every day in every area. There's something magical about knowing your numbers. So that's just a little bit of a principle. So I would say the failures came when I was moving too fast. I couldn't keep up with it. And I was saying yes too much and yes to the wrong people. And, you know, to the point people, you know, when you build a big platform, everyone's knocking on the door. So every speaker, people would say, Kyle, you put on these massive events and you never even got on stage. You never even made it an announcement. I'm like, yeah, because, you know, everyone in the room that wants to be the next Jim Rohn would have been taking my time when I'm trying to put on a world-class event.
Yeah.
And so you have everyone knocking at the door. And if you're empathetic, if you're caring, you want to help people. And there's so many good stories. There's so many good things out there. And, you know, you just have to say no all the time. And it took me a while to learn that lesson.
That's a really hard lesson, I think, for so many people to learn, is to how to say no. It's like, you know, I forget who it was. Was it Richard Branson, I think, or it might have even been him, but somebody who said that opportunities are kind of like buses. They just come and go. And you kind of just have to like learn to say no, because you just get on too many buses and you have no idea where you are after that, you know?
You know, on the podcast with Darren, he said, listen, we have a mantra.
Yeah.
How to grow faster, quicker. And he said, it gets down to three things: systems, people, but the third one's what throws everyone for a loop.
Yeah.
Choices. And he said, if you're not fastidious about saying no. And so he has some hard no's. I know I have some hard no's. And he said, one hard no makes up for 1,000 other no's. So like one of his hard no's is he doesn't do forwards for books. It's a hard no. But now he didn't even have to think about it. I'll tell you one of my hard no's.
Yeah, please.
This might make me a bad guy. I'm sorry. I'm in advance. But one of my hard no's is Facebook friends that are in Dallas that want to have lunch. That's a hard no, you know?
Yep.
There are people that are part of my inner circle or people I coach or, you know, good friends. I have to have, you know, that would potentially be a yes, but not that's never committed to me that, you know, they're in town and they want to have lunch and they're like, because again, you have to have boundaries. You have to, if I would have said yes, that's all I would have been doing. I would have been saying yes to everyone, even to those that I coach, even to those. So I'm a hard no on, to make it simple, I don't do breakfast and lunch or dinner.
Mm-hmm. Hey, first of all, that's not a bad guy thing. I think that's straight up wisdom. And I appreciate you sharing that, seriously.
Well, some people take it wrong, and that's a good filtering system too. My friend, Robert Helms, who you guys follow, you know, Robert says offend early and often, because what happens is it cuts out the, you know, hey, if someone's going to get offended, let's do it early. Don't invest a lot of time for them eventually to be offended.
I love that.
When you finally tell them no on something that makes no sense.
How do you go about, you know, practicing that self-awareness in conversations with people? Because, I mean, were you just obviously like just immediately amazing at that? Or is that something that you've had to develop over time for yourself?
So my model has always been fishing versus hunting. So, you know, a lot of people are out hunting and I'm like, how can I create a platform to attract people? And so, you know, Jim Rohn said, if you want to be successful, learn to bring value to the marketplace. If you want to be wealthy, learn to be valuable to valuable people. And so that has nothing to do with networking. That has to do with bringing value, creating something that brings value. So for me, I tend to think, I don't want to hunt. I want to put something out there that attracts. That's why social media is powerful, right? You can create videos, you can create content that will get people that are interested to raise their hand. The whole model, when I talk about the wheel, is how do you get people on the wheel and then bring value, create a relationship, and occasionally give them something to say yes to. So how can you bring that value, whether it's giving them something, whether it's having a conversation that's interesting, whether it's creating a platform? You guys with your podcast have created a platform where you're bringing in amazing people to connect with an audience. You don't get paid for it on the front end, right? There's value on the back end.
Right.
But that's a brilliant way. That's a great example of the models I've always built. How can I create platforms that can bring value? I'm here today with you to serve your audience. I'm not getting paid, but I'm coming because you've created an audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
by the way, thank you so much for that.
No. But I'm saying that's the model.
Yeah.
Now, some people would just prefer to cold call and go hunt. And I get that. I did that in the seminar business. And sometimes you have to do that. But the goal is to, you know, to fish versus hunt.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And I would even say garden, you know, like ultimately, you know, you're planting seeds and, you know, you're trusting. It's a faith proposition. It's like, I trust if I plant seeds at the right time, at the right place, I take good care of them. In good time, that tomato plant's going to come up and it's going to have tomatoes, right? And a lot of times, and I've watched this in my business. I watched it in seminar business. I've watched it in every other business. 20 years goes by and there's two kinds of results. There's the person that's always hunting and churning through people.
Right.
They're not relational oriented. They're transactional oriented. And then there's those that have learned to bring value and build platforms and fish. And what happens with their business, it compounds.
Yeah.
It compounds over time. And that's why when I, you know, my two tenets of marketing are tactics and principles.
Yeah.
And tactics, you know, those are things that, you know, that's everything from, you know, email marketing and social media marketing and text marketing and YouTube and everything else. And it's important. You need those, but that changes with technology and we're bombarded with all the tactical opportunities, but the principles don't change. I can tell you 30 years ago, the principles I believed in then, I believe in just as strongly now. Right. And those principles get down to have a great product, have great service, be relational. For me, it's get people on an email where I can, or get them on a list where I can build a relationship with them and bring value, because cold traffic is hard. It's not only hard. Mm-hmm. Those are the people you tend to have the most problems with. Mm-hmm. But if someone's been watching what you do and they trust you and you bring some social proof, by the time they do say yes, they already believe in you. They're already ready. It's like the fish jumping on the boat. And I want to cultivate that kind of culture and nature.
So you've mentioned the wheel a few times thus far in this podcast. Can you tell us a little more about that? It's a very interesting concept.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people think the wheel is a funnel. It's not a funnel. They're really different. You know, funnels have agendas. The wheel, again, going back to 1993, you know, I put Jim Rohn, he was the hub of the wheel, and each product was, or each spoke was a product or service. And then, you know, how to get people on the wheel. And from that, that drove everything I did. It's like, how do I get people on the wheel? How do I take them around the wheel? What spoke? You know, you don't need 100 spokes. Sometimes you just need 3 or 4 or 5. And so my criteria for spokes get down to number ones. What's my secret sauce? You know, what makes me special and unique? If you're trying to copycat someone else, then what's going to happen is you might get the person, but they're wanting someone else, right? Yeah, oh, I wanted this person. So you want to be as authentic as possible, but then you also want to accentuate what you're really good at. And then you also got to know who your avatar is. The spokes on your wheel need to be determined by who you want to attract. I mean, we all could do 100 different things potentially. I mean, there's so much being thrown at us, but I want to find a spoke that's part of my secret sauce.
Yeah.
It's part of the avatar I want to attract. That's what I did with this. I was trying to feed my advocates because they love Jim Rohn, try and give them something they could go out and hand out in the marketplace. And then I want it to be strategic. I want something that's going to knock down all the dominoes. So nothing changed with Jim Rohn's message in 1993 when we partnered, but the results, you know, went up 3 times and then 10 times, then, you know, 50 times. Nothing changed with Darren Hardy and his message when I started coaching him, or the real estate guys in 2013, or Robin Sharma. But the strategic mindset, you know, the sequencing of how you do things did change. And it got down to these questions related to the wheel. And here's the other big thing is, what are your long-term goals and why, short and long-term? Because here's the worst thing that could happen. If everything you want to accomplish happened and it led you to a place you didn't want to be. And so I can tell you right now, Darren Hardy is living the life he wants to live because he's built a company already knowing where he wanted to end up at, where I right. do see some people on hamster wheels, right? No, because man. They built something where the business owns them. And so there's all these different factors that come into mind. And then I'm a big believer in social proof. I'm a big believer in testimonials. You know, my good friend, Jeffrey Gittimer, asked me a question. He said, "Hey, Kyle," he was at my Philly Inner Circle. He said, and if you don't know who Jeffrey is, he wrote the Little Red Book of Selling, the all-time greatest sales book.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I've worked with Jeffrey since 1993, a phenomenal guy. And he said, "Kyle, where do you live?" I said, "Well, Jeffrey, you know, I live in Texas." He goes, No. "You're not going to give everyone your address, are you, to show up at your house?" I'm like, "Well, no." He goes, "Here's where you live. You live on your website. You live on social media. You live on your Instagram page. You live on YouTube." He said, "People can find you 24/7. Make sure those things really represent you well." So what I did, Gabe, with the wheel is I had Darren Hardy. I was at John Assaraf's house last year. He said, "When are you going to teach the wheel?" I've known John since 97. They all kept saying, "When are you going to teach it?" So I created a pretty in-depth 16 modules, over 100 bonus videos on everything from SEO and all kinds of, you know, how do you build your email list? I've had people say, "Listen, I have a box of business cards. I don't know how to build an email list." And again, you can't fish if you don't have a list to fish with, right? Otherwise you're hunting. So, you know, I put it all together and, so it's not, you know, the wheel sounds so simple and it is, but there's all these other modules, everything from tactics and principles to, you know, the 4 biggest things about your website that haven't changed. The 4 most important things to your website are no different today from my viewpoint than in 1999 when I created jimrohn.com and we started moving 7 figures a product. It's the 4 same. It's the 4 same things, right? And I'm happy to share those on this call if you want me to.
Yes, please.
But yeah. So number 1 is I want a mystique. I want a brand. So when they go there, I coach a lot of real estate investors. You know, I don't want a picture of a bunch of apartments. I want to see you because people buy you. What makes you unique? Then I want a tagline, if you will, like, you know, Jim Rohn was America's foremost business philosopher. I want a tagline. Then I want 3 to 4 bullets that talk to your avatar, that represent your secret sauce. Like when I mentioned chicken soup for the entrepreneur soul, that was surprising to you because I don't ever talk about it because that's not really my avatar. I'm going to talk more about Jim Rohn or Darren Hardy or Les Brown because I've experimented. That is who my avatar is.
Right.
So I don't even put that on my website. I don't even show a picture of that book. And I probably should. Mark's one of my best friends. You know, we traveled the world together.
Yeah.
And I have a powerful story about Mark. If we have time, I call him the guy that stretched the rubber band of my thinking. But you want those 3 or 4 things that are taglines. So for me, it's, you know, created over 100 intellectual properties, you know, things like that. But I'm being strategic to make sure those talk to my avatar. The other thing I want is social proof. So my website's pretty gaudy. I mean, I have all the people I've mentioned, you know, it's like 30 different people. It's kind of over the top, but that is part of my secret sauce. That's something that makes me different. You know, not everyone can do that. In fact, most people can't. So that is part of my story. So I'm going to own it, not diminish it. And if they see, you know, Phil Collins, they're going to hover over it. And there's a testimonial from Phil, you know,
yeah,
or Jim Rohn or Brian Tracy or Darren or Les. Then the fourth thing is an opt-in, right? A way for people to give you permission to say, you know, to send them whatever it is. And I don't like the old normal looking opt-in. So like on my website, I have kind of a cool looking graphic and you just want it to be smart. So those are the four things above the fold. So before you ever scroll down, I want to see those four things.
Awesome. That's and I want to remind all of our viewers to go to your website. I believe it is kylewilson.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
So just to remind all of our viewers, you know, if you go to kylewilson.com, you'll be able to check out all of the amazing stuff that he's been able to do and the different people he's connected with. And I don't think it's very gaudy at all. I actually think it's really cool. I absolutely love it. It was amazing when I went to it.
Well, listen, I've had some people that kind of get offended by it, and I'm like, okay, that's there we go. You know, it's like
offend early.
Yeah, well, if you don't have haters in your life, then you're not really doing anything, right? You know?
Right. Well, it's part of I talk about on the wheel. It's we diminish ourselves. And that's one of the hardest things is to own our story because we diminish it really out of ego. Mm-hmm. Like we don't want to be judged. And so I've had some amazing people, you know, I work with that one guy, his name's Tom Burns, orthopedic surgeon, doctor to the Olympic team, but the guy has $400 million in real estate. And Robert Kiyosaki wrote the foreword for his book. Gary Keller did a testimonial. And Tom's a guy coach, and he's part of my inner circle, part of my books. But Tom wouldn't tell any of those stories. And he would tell a story in the book and not mention any of that. And I'm like, dude, you got to quit diminishing your story because you can help people. And that was hard for him. And he finally had I made him uncomfortable enough by interviewing him and saying exactly what I just said in front of everyone.
Yeah.
And now he owns his story. And now that he's owning his story, he's attracting people. And again, I sold my companies. I retired for 7 years. When I came back out, you know, I didn't even want to post on Facebook. I didn't want people I grew up with thinking I'm saying, oh, I'm anything. So I would do a Jim Rohn quote, not even put, you know, my whole relationship and how I'd own Jim Rohn International. But then occasionally I would kind of step out and people would give me positive feedback. And I'm like, this is who I want to impact.
Yeah.
And the other people, like you guys said, it's real. They do exist. And it actually makes you stronger when you come to that place that your reasons, your purpose is bigger than the things, the resistance we have of being judged. And it's almost like you let go of your ego. So it's the opposite. Yeah. We're not out bragging. We're out actually trying to get someone's attention that we can help because it's very noisy out there, guys.
Oh, yeah.
And I put all those testimonials up because I have to. People don't know who I am necessarily, or they get me confused. You know, in my world, the marketing world, I'm turned off by 99% of it. That's why I don't talk about marketing a lot of times. Everyone's selling the dream and it turns me off. And I watch, and I wore that as a badge of honor until I finally watched too many people in my world getting ripped off. Yeah. And it's not the money they spent. It's not the 5 or 10 or 20,000 oftentimes. It's the, you know, 1 year and 18 months of going down the wrong path. Yeah. I've watched that. And finally I had to own it and say, listen, if I don't, you know, if I'm not an option for some of those people, or if I'm not telling my story loud enough that they can at least hear it and say, okay, well, you know, let me check with Kyle first. Right. I mean, honestly, that's what had me kind of come out of my shell a little bit. You know, I took responsibility for that. And so I say same thing with your listeners, if they have an opportunity in network marketing or in real estate or whatever it is, and they end up going to the bad side of, you know, they go to the guy that really doesn't care about them, that is treating it transactional, that's a little bit on them if they weren't owning their own story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned this a few times and it goes right into with owning their own story, like you're talking about now. is having people finding their why. You don't want them to go down the wrong path and like go down, build this business and realize the business owns them, like you said earlier. How do you go about helping people find that? Is there any like questions or process that you've learned over the years that help?
Yeah. So, you know, we have an in-depth questionnaire we take people through. We have a secret sauce exercise where you really figure out what you're good at. But I mean, the simple answer is, you know, list out what you want in 3 to 5 years. Here's a good centering question I found. Now, this is going to be challenging for some people, but if you look out 3 to 5 years from now, if people were going to say, Cody, Gabe, when they think of you being at the top of what you do, what is it? Mm. Is it podcasting? Is it real estate? Is it putting on events? Is it leadership? Is it masterminds? What is it? And I'm talking from a business standpoint. I'm not saying great father, husband. I'm talking from a business standpoint. I've done a lot of things, you know, publisher, yeah, events. And so that's a hard question for me. That's a confronting question for me. And I know that's the case for so many people. Mm. The more you can work through that question, you know, a guy named Stephen Pressfield talks about, we have these, you guys ever heard of Stephen? He's really phenomenal.
I've heard the name.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, but you have to refresh me.
Yeah, the War of Art. He actually.
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah, yes.
That's yeah. Funny. Yeah. And there's some other, just amazing guy, but he's also, you know, written Hollywood screenplays and movies. Yep. And, but he talks about, we have this old, what's the term? But sometimes we're playing small because it's comfortable.
Yeah.
And we're not really, you know, everything looks great, but we're not really doing what we're supposed to be doing. So I found that's a good centering question to really get clear.
Yeah.
On, you know, if people are going to think of me as being famous in 3 to 5 years, what is it for, you know? And from there, think of how you get there. There's always a way to get there. I had this mantra of, how do I go from 200 people in a seminar room to 2,000? I didn't solve that in a day. That took about 6 months. And all of a sudden, I had a plan. Now, it took a lot of stepping out in faith. But eventually I got there and I was getting 2,500 people in a room. And that's what led me to making Jim Rohn an offer he couldn't refuse, which led me to everything we've talked about today. But it really began with what you're saying, Gabe, knowing where I want it to get to.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that comes up when you have a challenge or a wall or a difficulty. You know, I was interviewing a guy named Vic Johnson, who's just been a huge influence in my life. He's an incredible marketer yesterday. And he's like, Kyle, every single great thing that's ever happened to him was born out of a challenge or out of a no or out of a huge pivot.
I'm soaking everything in that you're taking right now, but that's amazing, or that you're giving right now. That's super cool. Man. So how do you encourage people to do that? Make those big pivots, because that can be hard for people, I think, sometimes, to be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an individual situation. I'm not here to encourage people to do that. That's their own volition of where they're at and what they want. I'm just saying what's worked for me and what you mentioned the wheel. I mean, I have frameworks to get there, but for me, it's someone has to be motivated and they have to be in that place. And timing's a big part of this too, right?
Right.
So if things are going great and, you know, I'm not saying people should do that, but to me, it's a constant place I revisit is, what do I want? You know, 3 to 5 years from now, what's important?
Yeah. If you were on your deathbed, and not to sound morbid here, but if you were on your deathbed, what would be the final piece of advice that you'd give everybody around you? And it doesn't need to be business related, you know, anything that we've been talking about. It could be anything at all.
I'm hesitant to answer that because I don't know what I would say on my deathbed, because I think about these things And every day I see the world a little differently, right? Every day is kind of a new day, a fresh perspective. I mean, I think it would definitely be in the spiritual context of everything's okay. Everything's all right. You know, don't take life too serious. It's all going to work out. You know, be present.
That's surprising how often that is the answer that we get. I guess it actually is not that surprising. It shouldn't be anyway. That's that's been a common answer.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah.
Wow,
yeah. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you so much for your time. I know you have a book that you're looking to give out as well. Can you tell us a little more about that real quick?
Yeah, I did this last year. It's called Success Habits of Super Achievers. And I'm really proud of it. We had Darren Hardy, Les Brown, Mark Victor Hansen, John Asraf, Lisa Haysha, Phil Collin, Seth Mosley, three-time Grammy winner, millennial, by the way, 32 years old, 29 number one songs. We athletes, the founder of Act Software, Mike Muni, just so many incredible stories that came from podcast interviews. And I'd like to give everyone a free digital copy of the book. Wow, and all they have to do is send me an email to info@kylewilson.com. They could put in Cody and Gabe on the subject or send book, however they want to do it. I also include a link that has some of these other books for your women listeners. I did a book called Passionistas. It had 40 millennial women, powerful stories. And some just other cool resources I'll send them. So info@kylewilson.com, put Cody and Gabe show, and I'll send them a link to get those resources.
Thank you so much, Kyle. Awesome. Thank you. This has been such a blast.
You guys are amazing. I love the energy. I love the questions. It's been my honor. Thank you so much.